Ours to Protect, brought to you by Sunshine 106.8, and the IBI is funded by Cumashoon na Man with the television license. Check out oursprotect.ie for more info.
Hello there, evening. I'm Carol Dooley, and you're welcome to join me now for this, our special edition of Hours to Protect. In fact, the conclusion of the current series. Every week over the last 12 months, we've had, I hope you'll agree, fascinating and highly educational conversations, organisations and individuals from our city, the country, and indeed the world about climate change and climate action. And 12 months ago, on the very first one, we introduced the series with the Minister for the Environment, Communications and Transport, Eamon Ryan. And I'm delighted to be joined by the Minister again as we review the last 12 months. Minister Ryan, thank you for your time this evening. As we look back over the last 12 months, how much progress have we made in this country on tackling climate change and taking better care of our planet, do you think?
Well, I think we made significant progress. I think across, in the energy sector particularly, like if you look at it, every day now about 100 households are putting up solar panels each day on their roof, and that's saving them money as well as developing renewable power. I've seen the first of the offshore wind projects going into planning. It's in Oriel, it's in Dundalk Bay. And it's been 10, 15 years in line, but it's finally going into the planning system. And if it gets through that, it'll be built reasonably quickly. I think 3 years' time, 4 years' time, the developers think it could be operation and working for people. On the efficient use of energy, every week about 1,000 homes are retrofitting and improving their households. So there is real practical change. It is something the Irish people are good at. We want to do. And I suppose a year ago, it was a particularly strong incentive because there were such high energy prices. Thankfully, in the last year, energy prices have started to come down, particularly electricity prices. But we're seeing no weakening in the desire of Irish people to go renewable, to be efficient, and to be part of this transition. So the last year, I think, has been climate in terms of actual emissions reduction in Ireland and things happening have been a quite good one. Now we need to double that again, but I think we can. I think there'll be huge impetus as well, because people, when they see neighbours doing it and it working, particularly improving their home and putting solar panels on the roof and saving on their bills, I think that tends to spread, and that's what's happening at the moment. It's not just at home, it's also every school. And if communities want to come together, we have about 900 sustainable energy communities around the country. Rather than taking the foot off the pedal, I think actually we need to go faster and go further so that every sector of our society benefits, in farming and small businesses, as well as at home.
Can I talk to you for a moment about the UN, the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, 17 SDGs to transform the world, which are focusing on five elements of people, planet, peace, prosperity and partnership. Now, we in Ireland are committed, or said we're committed, to achieving all 17 of these SDGs by 2030. How confident are you that we will be able to do this?
I think we can. I'm inspired in the fact that it was an Irish civil servant, David Donoghue. He was one of the two lead civil servants who brought the Sustainable Development Goals through the United Nations system, who got agreement. So we have a real obligation, I think, of it having coming from the Irish civil service, this incredible international movement, to deliver it here at home. It does make sense for us to do so because it brings social justice along with environmental justice together. We are well placed. The assessment we did last year of where are we shows that we are making real progress. There are some areas where we need to do better. It actually was primarily in the environmental side. It was in areas like water quality and air quality, and the basic environmental concerns that we all have about having clean air, water and abundant nature. So that's the one area where we probably have to make most progress, but I think we can. And I think the great advantage about the Sustainable Development Goals, they originally started by how would you bring poor countries out of poverty? So it was how do you protect the most vulnerable, the most poor countries in the world? It's spread out now to think about, well, how do you progress developed countries? And Ireland is a developed country. It's a manifesto for every country. And it brings rights to education, to justice, freedom of expression, all these kind of social rights, as well as rights to a clean and healthy environment. And it's in our interest. It's not rocket science. It's not controversial, but it requires focus and effort. And that's what the sustainable energy or the sustainable development goals, it focuses on very clear measures of progress. And if you look at where we're going, we are progressing as a country. We all, like, there's loads of things we need to do better. But particularly when it comes to the environment, that's the area where we need to do a lot more.
Well, we do. And we've only got 6 years left in order to do it. 6 years is not a long time.
But sometimes the thing, who has it said, was it Bill Gates said, people often overestimate what they can do in a year, but underestimate what they can do in a decade. Change is coming. The change is happening. There is, like, take that example mentioned, what I was mentioning earlier on about the solar revolution. It's taking place. It's becoming cheaper. It is the cheapest way of developing power now, even in cloudy Ireland. That innovation, that development that's taken place, it's for our good. It's not a hardship. It's not a negative. It's not a costly thing. It's just a matter of doing things differently. Similarly, I'd say, if you take the area of transport, like, transport's very difficult to change because so much patterns are set in place that, you know, our lifestyle patterns, our everyday patterns. But it's interesting, every time when we put in good quality public transport or when we put in safe facilities, safe walking and cycling facilities, when you're looking to put it in, it can be very challenging because people are understandably fearful of change. But you very rarely reverse back. You very rarely undo some of those measures when you have put them in because people realize, do you know what, this works better. So I think we've every reason to make the change. It won't be easy. It's not small. But I think it will lead to a better country, a better island, and socially as well as environmentally. And that's what inspires me to push for everything we can do.
Can I just go back to transport for the moment and talk about electric vehicles? Because despite the drop in sales, you, as far as I understand, are sticking with the aim of having 30% of Ireland's privately owned cars electric by 2030.
Yeah, I think we will. I think you're right. Electric vehicle sales in the last 6 months have, the increase has slowed, or there was a slight drop in the first couple of months of the year. But I don't see it stopping because, well, firstly, that pattern is taking place in every country across the world. It's a phenomenon to do with, you know, as we move from maybe early adopters taking on the vehicles to more mass market. And there's an understandable, well, this thing happened in kind of steps. I think we will take the next step to it be the mass market, to everyone really having electric vehicles because, well, firstly, they're going to become cheaper. There is much more competition now with cars coming from the likes of China and elsewhere, which are significantly lower cost. And that will bring down the cost of electric vehicles, which will make them more competitive than the alternatives. But also, we're scaling up the charging infrastructure. We're going to be putting charging stations in every 60 kilometres on the motorways, really high-speed chargers. So that concern some people might have about range, you know, how you can get all the way done on a journey, I think that will reduce as the charging infrastructure increases. And we're putting about 100 million euros of public money in to support that. The truth is that about 80% of all cars in Ireland, electric cars, are charged at home. And actually, with the home charger, it's relatively easy to manage it. My own experience, anyway, over the last 3 years with my own electric car, is that with a bit of planning, with a bit of foresight, with plugging in at home, actually, most journeys are doable. So I think the cars are getting better. The charging infrastructure is improving. I think a lot of those concerns can be overcome. And electric vehicles will become the mainstay. They're just better cars. And that's why I think they will take over.
Finally, Minister, as it is a year since we last spoke to you, and a lot has happened certainly over the last 12 months, can I just ask you, what would you most like to see happen over the next 12 months from a sustainability perspective?
I think the area that probably I'd most like to see change is in the transport area, because I think it is actually the most challenging. We've a lot of projects, taking Dublin, the Bus Connects projects, all of which are starting to come out of planning now. Well, we're going to start building them. And I think also this summer we will be redirecting some of the true traffic out of the city centre. And I think if you put those two together, if you start to have really good bus infrastructure and less car-dominated streets, I suppose more than anything else in the next year, less road deaths with the first ambition, by creating this safer, cleaner, more sustainable transport system, that's probably the most, in my mind, going to be the key in the next year. Can we switch our transport system so it really works better by really speeding up public transport and making it safer to walk and cycle? And I think we can do that. And I think the next year will tell a lot as we start to make the changes in Dublin, particularly, that people see them happening on the ground. And that then, if we see that working, it won't stop, because I think people prefer it. They do want a cleaner, more efficient, more effective local transport system. And we can and will build that.
Okay, well, we look forward to that happening. We'll see where we're at. You never know, we might very well be speaking with you again this time next year.
I look forward to that.
Minister Eamon Ryan, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thanks indeed.
This is Sunshine 106.8. I'm Carol Dooley, and this is a special edition conclusion of the series, Ours to Protect, our weekly series on protecting the environment. And we have been talking with many individuals, organisations around our city, the country and further afield on how they're tackling climate change and climate action. We have also been sending out Sunshine's Jane McNamara to find out what the people of Dublin think about it. And Jane joins me now. Jane, have you noticed over the last 12 months a particular trend or theme in how people are thinking or in their reactions to your questions about climate change?
Well, a reoccurring theme that I noticed kind of from the start of the year right up to now, it's not going anywhere, is people's concern with money. So there was an overwhelming interest in the climate, an overwhelming sense that this is something we should be prioritising. It's an issue close to people's hearts. Like, I think people really love Ireland for its beaches and its nice parks and all that. But when it comes down to it, people are struggling financially. And when it comes down to making a certain decision on recycling or buying a certain product, it really was a case of, if I can afford it, yeah, I'll do it. Mm.
And did you see, therefore, that when it comes to things like recycling or refurbished goods or buying, you know, secondhand mm-hmm. goods, that people were therefore, as a result or because of the fact that they're trying to be more financially conscious, that they're actually perhaps more inclined to visit a secondhand shop or to buy a refurbed appliance or phone or laptop or whatever, as opposed to going and buying new?
Yeah, definitely. Huge appetite for reusing things. People are really enjoying secondhand shops, using adverts. There's no embarrassment around that. Like, it's an enjoyable thing for people to do. And when it came to that, the biggest thing was convenience. You know, are there shops near me? Is there someone near me on adverts? If it's convenient, absolutely, I'll go with that option. There was very few people, I mean, very few, who said, no, my preference is something new. We definitely are embracing, I think, the fun and the creativity of recycling, whether it's clothes or furniture. Definitely very positive response when it came to those things.
Yeah, but still, it's a financial concern
it
too.
Is. Yes, it's maybe motivated by the fact that it can be cheaper, but also people are enjoying the fact that it's also good, you know, to reuse items. So I think basically, like with anything, like with any kind of change, if you can make it affordable and convenient, the interest is there. We do care about the environment. Like, people love, you know, the beaches near Dublin and they love the nice parks. And I think we all do really want to maintain them. But yeah, definitely finance and convenience, just two big, big considerations.
And do you think that people now are much more educated when it comes to climate change and climate action, that they're doing their homework and they appreciate that the planet is in trouble?
I think everyone I spoke to is aware it's a big issue. I think most people I spoke to would agree it's housing, immigration and climate, big issues. So they're aware it's an issue. When it came down to kind of the details of different schemes and policies, there was maybe a small bit of frustration, like that they weren't being educated enough. Like, you have to remember, people are so busy and they have so much going on in their lives. So they do hear this kind of conversation around climate in the background, but maybe they're not getting the, you know, exact details they need. And obviously there's, you know, personal responsibility there. But yeah, I think people are generally aware. And then, you know, depending on maybe how busy they are, they're not aware enough.
And was that different across demographics, or did you find that maybe the younger demographic were much more open to going and doing the research than the older demographic, or vice versa?
Well, what I noticed with the younger demographic is quite sad, actually, was that they were very stressed. Like when I was asking people who appeared to be anyway under about 25, they were really taking it very seriously and they were sounding quite heavy about it. Like, oh yeah, the climate, like I know it's a big issue. And I really felt for them because when I was that age, I definitely was not taking on my shoulders kind of big global issues. So I felt as I was talking to the younger people, like, God, we really have to make this fun for these young people, like, and not make it feel so heavy. So that was one thing I noticed. But no, generally, I think older and younger people, similar kind of knowledge, I would say.
And did you see then over the 12 months that there was a difference in people's reaction or people's acknowledgement, I guess, of what's going on now? In June 2024, as opposed to June 2023?
Yeah, kind of. I think people were maybe slightly more familiar with the climate conversation from one end of the year to the next, but not massively, to be totally honest.
Okay, but still, a bit of a light bulb moment has gone on over the last 12 months. It is worrying though, isn't it, when you, just to pick up on your point there about young people,
yeah,
and feeling the stress, because young people have enough stress as it is.
Yeah, definitely.
And pour this on top of it when it is such a huge and hugely important, obviously, global issue, you kind of wonder, how are they going to navigate through this?
I know, definitely. Like we really need to be giving them a hopeful future. And I think when we're kind of giving them these messages about how serious this is, on one hand, obviously it's important. On the other hand, they should be enjoying their youth. So I was always kind of trying to talk to them about fun things they can do, such as shopping in secondhand shops. I remember when I was in my early 20s and I would not have been caught dead in a secondhand shop. Like I just wouldn't have. And now they're really embracing it. And that's almost a way to signal that they're environmentally conscious. You know, I got this in the shop down the road, or it was €5. I found this cool bag or whatever. So yeah, I think for young people, it's definitely on their mind.
Okay, so all in all,
yeah,
as a result of your experience, do you think that there has been or there is a positive shift?
I definitely think there's a willingness to want to protect the environment and to appreciate it. Absolutely, definitely. I mean, there is. It's just a case of, like I said at the start, finance and convenience and things like that. People, the cost of living is kind of in the background for everyone. So I definitely think it's an issue people are taking seriously, yes.
Okay, thank you, Jane. Sunshine's Jane McNamara. This is Sunshine 106.8 and a special edition, final edition in the current series of Ours to Protect. Over the last 12 months, we have put the focus on different topics every week, from what Dublin City Council's action plan is all about to recycling, taking better care of our beaches. We've even spoken about a biodegradable bottle produced in Barbados, which looks like plastic but actually has been made from corn. All under the umbrella, of course, of protecting the planet and our future. I'm joined now by Sunshine CEO Sean Ashmore. And Sean, from your perspective, reviewing, looking back over the last 12 months, how effective do you think the series has been in educating us all about climate change?
I think it's been a huge success. And I don't just say that because, well, you would say that, wouldn't you? I think it's been a real eye-opener for everybody in the station, for the people who've been working on the show, for people who've been, like, you know, doing the editing. Jane has been out on the street talking to people. And you just get a completely different perspective on it. And you realise there's so much going on and so much that needs to go on. And you get a real understanding of how people are feeling about it. And, you know, is there a need for this kind of programming? Absolutely. You know, is it the right thing to do to highlight this as an issue, to, you know, put the magnifying glass on it or shine a spotlight on it? Absolutely. So it's been really interesting. And the feedback the station has received over the last year has been nothing but positive. People, you know, seeking out something they heard last Monday or the Monday before. We direct them to the option to listen again or to podcast it on the station's website. And, you know, the stats for the downloads and the listens on that have been really strong. And, you know, that's been probably a bit of a surprise, but really good to see.
Well, it's interesting that I think now climate change, climate action, sustainability has become very much a priority for people. And even though this time last year people were talking about it, there has been absolutely a definite shift in the way people are thinking and the way they are behaving. And we're seeing this with the response to the Hours to Protect that we broadcast over the last 12 months.
Well, I suppose, look, one thing you can't deny, it's not going away. It's not getting any better. You know, any of the stories that we broadcast in our normal news bulletins only tell of, you know, it being another record for temperature or another record for rainfall or just another confirmation of the fact that the climate is changing. It's a bit unusual. It's not something that you can dismiss. All of the evidence points to it being exactly what everybody says it is. It's climate change as a result of, I suppose, how we've all been living and consuming, you know, on this planet. And everybody now, I think, realizes much more than before, and even a little bit more than maybe this time last year, that the cumulative effect of all the little things that an individual can do, you know, do in our own lives, in our own homes, in terms of how we adopt, I suppose, our approach to transport or tourism or waste disposal, that all of those things, you know, do make a difference if everybody or a sufficient number of people are on board. And I think it's been great to kind of, you know, get that feedback from listeners that they're looking for the, you know, the tip sheets that we have on the website. They're looking to find out more about something they heard on the last episode because they want to take action.
Can I talk to you about climate change mitigation for businesses, because this is a challenge that businesses really are facing? And I know that when we spoke with you at the very first one, or on the very first one last year, you did talk about, you know, Sunshine 106 and what we were doing as a company ourselves in order to reduce our carbon footprint. But that actually, that's an area that has, well, really exploded in many ways over the last 12 months. And it is a challenge that businesses are facing.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talked last year about electric cars and solar panels, LED lights, occupancy sensors. In fairness, you know, it's the tip of the iceberg. There's so many other things going on in relation to sustainability and reducing carbon footprint. And I think for any business, like we're in the business of being a radio station, we're in the business of selling advertising to advertisers. But whoever your customers are, whatever business you're in, ultimately, I think you're going to have no choice but to be able to demonstrate your green credentials or to set out exactly what your carbon footprint is. Because if you're in business yourself and you're buying off somebody, whoever that supplier is, you want to be, I suppose, you want to be sure and you want to be able to confirm that they have the same values as you. So if you're a business that maybe doesn't really care about this or doesn't embrace it or thinks it isn't relevant, you'll probably find that, well, your customers think it's important. And unless you can set out what you're doing and that you're taking it seriously and the steps that you're taking to reduce the carbon footprint of whatever it is you're supplying to them, you'll probably be left behind. And I think it'll be a case that the only businesses that will thrive are businesses who are doing the right thing, taking the right steps, and I think most importantly, being able to demonstrate and track and measure exactly what kind of carbon footprint they're leaving behind.
Okay, well, no doubt about it. We've certainly set the ball in motion. And speaking with the Transport Minister, Eamon Ryan, earlier on, I mean, he laid out some of the plans for the next 12 months and what he would like to see happen. So, and as you said too, we have our tip sheets on our website. So we have spoken with organisations over the last 12 months who are providing help and support to businesses in their quest to become more sustainable. And indeed, for anybody at home, if you want more information, that's all on our website too. So I take it really you're happy with the way it has gone over the last 12 months. You're delighted that Sunshine, as I am, has been able to play our part in getting the word out, sharing pivotal information and offering sound advice and help on how to live more sustainably. It has to be a priority in all our lives.
Absolutely, 100%. I think that, you know, the important thing to say as this particular season comes to an end, there's a whole bunch of resources on the website. Go to sunshineradio.ie/hours to protect. Have a listen to some of the programs maybe you missed. Maybe you want to listen to them again. Look at the tip sheets. There's loads of ideas and loads of insights that, you know, people can adopt and use in their everyday lives.
Sean Ashmore, CEO of Sunshine, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Sunshine 106.8. I'm Carol Dooley. You're listening to the final in the current series of Hours to Protect. It's also coming to the end of the school year. And at the beginning of the series, one of our segments, we very much focused on the Green Schools Initiative. And therefore, it's very fitting that we finish out this edition by also putting the spotlight on the Green Schools Initiative, not least because the Loretto Primary School in Dalkey has won quite the prestigious award. We're joined now by Rachel Mackerel, who is the Green Schools Officer with Ontashka, to tell us more about that. Rachel, before we talk about this award, can you first remind us of what the Green Schools Initiative is indeed all about?
Green Schools, I suppose, is one of Ireland's most successful environmental education programmes. A lot of people may also recognise us by the green flags outside schools. So it's now expanded to 11 flags or 11 themes schools can work through. Each theme is they focus in on how the school can make positive change on that topic, whether it be like energy or litter and waste or water. So they work through it one by one, I suppose, as they kind of progress from each theme to the other. It's all about taking, you know, positive action, maybe about climate change. So as people might not know, that Green Schools is an international programme or a network. So in other countries, we're known as eco-schools, with over 73 countries participating. Ireland is actually one of the countries where it's most successful. So we're really proud of all the amazing work the schools do here.
And it's all with the support of Ontashka.
Exactly. So it's run under Ontashka, and it's for primary schools and secondary schools as well.
I would imagine that kids, particularly young kids, really, really love this. And they love to get involved and they love to see that they're making a difference. And the whole idea is not only to educate them while they're at school and to make a difference there, but obviously to take that then out into the community. So they learn how to protect the environment, what it's all about, and then they take all that knowledge with them.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose Green Schools is a lovely space for maybe different students to work on different things, maybe not so academic or so exactly organising, or, you know, kind of fostering a real self sense of, you know, empowerment or kind of going out and doing things. And it's a lovely way for schools to connect through the different year groups and also to the community. In general, the whole programme is based on empowering students to make change themselves. So we kind of come in with real practical ideas and like lesson plans and workshops that we can do in the schools. So it's really about kind of unleashing the creativity of teachers and students, taking real positive action towards climate action. On the travel flag, which is the flag I work on, whenever we bring the students out, we do like a walkability audit, but we always also like point out the nature kind of like really on our doorstep, and it's all about celebrating that.
Yeah, absolutely. And keeping the theme of travel, because we're coming to the end of the school year now, and certainly for the pupils at Loretto Dalkey, ending it on a high because they just won quite a prestigious award.
Exactly. So they won an amazing award. So we have an annual big competition called the Big Travel Challenge. And we challenge schools all across the country to promote sustainable modes of transport and try to maybe make a change in the travel behaviour of their staff and students. So the competition, it's now in its ninth year. And this year we did things a bit differently. So we had a county winner and then we had a province winner. And exactly, so Loretto Dalkey took home the title for the Eastern Province. They did a really great job.
Okay, and what exactly did they do to win this?
Really an interesting initiative. They have around 301 pupils in the school and they decided to promote something called Park and Stride. School selects a designated spot away from the school where everyone parks and then walks the last bit in, and it's great for like loads of different reasons. It helps to reduce the amount of traffic outside the school and then improve the safety of the area, and then also everyone kind of gets a bit of health, kind of a bit of fresh air coming walking in, kind of the health benefits of walking. Part of their Park and Stride, they decided to create a walking bus or where everyone kind of walks in together. So they decided to assemble the local Coola GAA club every morning, and they walked for the 10 minutes to school. I said the walking bus created a real great buzz of excitement at the school with, you know, the pupils, parents and teachers and additional needs assistants. So everyone kind of getting involved and kind of walking and chatting together in. And then it was really, really nice to see they reached out to local other kind of initiatives around the town. So they linked in with the local Tidy Towns group. So they had some of the volunteers walking in on the walking bus every day and just helping to ensure the safety of the children when crossing the road from the Coola GAA to the Loretto school. And then also on the last day, they had the community guard kind of came in to really kind of add up the ante even more. So it was great, great all round.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations to everybody involved. Congratulations to Ontashka for all the work that you do in supporting this. I would suspect that parents too are delighted to see their kids getting involved in something so positive. And it's a great learning experience for them too.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And even something simple like fostering a sense of independence, maybe like the kids can, like in senior primary anyway, can maybe, you know, walking with their friends and kind of chatting and even just kind of getting that social side, either they'll be talking to their parents and kind of relating what happened to the day, or even just getting that bit more social side with maybe other pupils in different years on the Green Schools Committee. Green Schools is all about kind of connecting with the wider school community and reaching out then maybe to the community around the school as well.
Yeah. Well, lovely. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with us. I'm delighted that you have. And as I said, a lovely way of now just finishing off the Hours to Protect Our initiative here over the last year on such a high. Congratulations again to Loretta Primary School in Dorky. Rachel Mackerel, the Green Schools Travel Officer with Antashka. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that is the conclusion of Hours to Protect. As I mentioned at the start, over the last 12 months, we've had some fascinating and highly educational conversations about climate change and climate action. I want to thank all our guests and contributors for taking part in the series. And a reminder to you that if you have missed any of those episodes, you can listen back right now to them all on our website, sunshineradio.ie. You will also get a lot of information there and advice on what you can do in your own life to help protect our planet and our future. I'm Carol Dooley, and thank you for listening.
Hours to Protect, brought to you by Sunshine 106.8, and the IBI is funded by Cumashun na Mban with the television license fee. Check out hourstoprotect.ie for more info.